Monster Man, episode 502. Welcome to Athos. Hello, and welcome to Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. I'm James Holloway, and I'm reading my way through the gaming books of yesteryear. And as I do, I'm taking a look at the monsters that I find in them, their history, their mythology, their ecology, their imagery, and how to use them in games. In today's episode, we are laying the groundwork for our new series on the monsters of Dark Sun, the 1991 post-apocalyptic fantasy setting for Advanced Dungeons & Dragons 2nd Edition. Before we do that, though, it's time to take care of a little business. First, it's time to thank some Patreon backers. Yes, these are people who've gone to patreon.com/monsterman, and they have pledged as little as $1 a month to help support the show. And if, like today's patrons, you pledge at the $2 or higher level, you'll also get access to all new episodes of my other, I guess all old episodes. I just like saying all new. I think I got that huckster in me. But you'll get access to all episodes of my other podcast, Patron Deities. So thank you very much to new patron Gabriel Ross, and welcome back to returning patron Jason Connerly. Your support means a lot to me, and I appreciate it. Also, Knock number 4. So Knock is a... I mean, magazine is what we call it, but it's a bit of an odd term for what is essentially a series of books. But it's a kind of miscellany, articles, scenarios, monsters, all kinds of stuff by a wide range of different gaming creators. Most of it really applicable to any kind of fantasy game. And it's on Kickstarter now. I've got a piece in there, a little mini scenario called The Night of the Blood Swine. And you should check it out. I'll put a link down in the show notes. Also, if you're listening to this before or on December 2nd, 2023, I'm going to be at Dragon Meet. My panel, which was supposed to be on at 1 p.m., has been canceled, so I don't have to do that, but you can probably find me, you know, wandering around. I'm going to try and make it to the panel by friends of the show, Steve and Paula Dempsey, and I usually try to make the Ken and Robin live taping at 5 as well, and, like, I'll be around. So if you hear a familiar voice, say hi. All right, with that out of the way, let's talk about Dark Sun. So Dark Sun made a surprisingly strong showing in the Patreon poll, a good 10% plus ahead of the next nearest candidate. I find that quite interesting. If I had to pick a reason why, and obviously, I mean, you could tell me why you voted that way, but if I had to pick a reason why, I would say that Dark Sun is maybe the most different of all of the D&D settings we've looked at so far, and then maybe it's going to have the most different monsters. I'm kind of going in blind here. We covered maybe one Dark Sun monster in Season 5, I think that's right. I think just the Gith, which is also the only Dark Sun monster I have a miniature of, because they were very cheap, and I liked the sort of caveman look of them. Anyway, let's talk about what Dark Sun is before we get started on its monsters. So Dark Sun came out in 1991, when I was in junior high school, and if I'd been exposed to it much at that time, I think it might have made me play D&D, although maybe not. I don't know. This was an age when, like, I was never a huge sort of traditional fantasy gamer. We did play fantasy games, mainly Tunnels and Trolls, and my friends played D&D, but I just never really did. But mainly, I was playing, like, Palladium games, so I was playing, like, Teenage Mutant Ninja Turtles, and then other games like Heroes Unlimited and Beyond the Supernatural. Marvel Superheroes, that was a big one. And then, you know, when I'm 13, that means I'm starting to get into Call of Cthulhu, and Rifts was like the big game at that time. So Call of Cthulhu, Rifts, and we're maybe like 2 years away from me discovering Vampyre. And in a way, I think you can see Dark Sun as an attempt to blend in a little more with that trend. The transition in the gaming world, these transitions are always more, they look more dramatic than they really are, because I think of, you know, these kind of like quote-unquote classic AD&D supplements and things as being of a different generation from something like Vampyre. But like Dark Sun comes out the year before Vampyre, which means that something like, you know, Spelljammer comes out only 3 or 4 years before Vampyre, right? So this generation in terms of game products is like 5 to 10 years. Anyway, my point is that it was the 90s and Dark Sun was an extremely 90s game in several respects. So it was a post-apocalyptic game that moved away from the traditional kind of medievalist fantasy trappings of previous D&D settings. Now, Spelljammer had done that a bit in 1989 with its kind of like, we're pirates in space sort of vibe, but it was still very grounded in traditional D&D, or at least had a lot of elements that overlapped. Dark Sun represented a larger break. And of course, there was Ravenloft as well, which was that kind of gothic horror thing. But I do think that Dark Sun was very intentionally designed to be different. You know, it was designed from the ground up in a way that I think was comparatively rare for D&D settings. So if you think about a D&D setting like Greyhawk, it's something that kind of originates in play and then gets elaborated in print. Or you have something like Spelljammer, which is spun off from existing AD&D and therefore has a lot of that DNA. Even something like Al-Qadim, like technically it's part of the Forgotten Realms, but it's got all these new kits and whatnot. But it's still partly influenced by traditional AD&D and then partly influenced by the source material that it's working from, right? The Arabian Nights tales and things like that. So it has a very specific genre in mind that's not exactly the same as, but pretty close to, traditional fantasy. So Dark Sun, by contrast, is, well, I mean, like, it's not 100% whole cloth. Obviously, it kind of owes a lot to sort of sword and sandal movies and Mad Max and so forth. But I think even the level of unity in creation that it has is comparatively rare for a D&D setting. And one facet of this is probably the most recognizable thing about Dark Sun is that it has a very consistent visual style, right? The artist, Gerald Brom, was very involved in the creation of the setting. And Dark Sun, more than any other D&D setting and artist, like more than even Planescape and Tony DiTerlizzi, I think, is associated with Brom, right? Like, Brom is Dark Sun and Dark Sun is Brom. And Brom's sort of gothic, spiky fantasy seems as different from the lush mullets of, like, Elmore and Caldwell and Parkinson and Easley as the Terlitzis' kind of whimsical, spindly figures did. Another way in which Dark Sun differed from existing AD&D settings was that it had integrated metaplot. So from the jump, it was designed to have metaplot. And by metaplot, I mean that the state of the game world is not stable, even external to things that the player characters do. This may be the most 90s thing about it. In fact, it took games like Vampire a couple of years to really develop into having a metaplot. When they discovered that players were, or readers perhaps, were interested in the ongoing development of all this stuff about, I don't know, Hardstott and Tyler and whoever. I don't pay attention to any of that stuff. I found it very annoying because it doesn't relate very much to the type of game that I was playing and consequently felt like wasted space to me. Dark Sun had an ongoing advancing plotline that resulted in significant changes to the setting, and those could come from not just game products, but also associated novels. This is, of course, a time when TSR's novel publishing arm is doing very well. So the setting is in flux, and the political situation of the Tyr region, which is sort of the area where PCs are presumed to start, it's kind of the main play area of Dark Sun, that was subject to change. So as new products came out, whether scenarios or novels, the world of Athas would change and develop. This is interesting in a way, because I guess it helps make it feel uncertain, which is something that you want. It helps make it feel like important things are going on, and there were definitely bits where, like, this change was made by the protagonists of the novel, or by your PCs. So that could happen in a campaign, and I think that that's interesting. I think that there is sometimes a feeling with published game settings that there's nothing that the PCs can do to change the world, even when they're these very powerful, like, warriors and wizards who it seems should have an impact on, you know, the fate of nations or whatever. On the other hand, it can be a risky proposition, because if there's one thing that we know about someone who's buying a Dark Sun book, it's that they like the world of Athas the way it is. If they didn't like it, they wouldn't be buying the book. So definitionally, when you publish a change in that book, you are changing something they like, and you can't guarantee that you'll be changing it to something they like. So that's the 90s-ness of it. But what of Athas itself? Well, Athas, the planet which is the setting of Dark Sun, is an inhospitable arid landscape. I mean, I guess the parts that you play in anyway are an arid landscape that was ravaged by a great catastrophe in its past. And so there's areas of dangerous wilderness punctuated by kind of individual city-states ruled over by tyrannical sorcerer kings. And I believe the sorcerer kings are mainly in that Tyr region that I mentioned earlier. The distinction between arcane magic and other kinds of magic is really important here. Arcane magic caused that past catastrophe by draining the energy out of Athas' living beings, so there aren't, you know, crops and trees and soil bacteria and whatever that it would need to be fertile. And thus, wizards and other arcane magic users are feared and hated, and they need to do what they do in hiding, which I guess, you know, it's the early 90s, that the X-Men are very popular, etc. The most common form of quote-unquote magic is actually psionics, which are very common. Almost every Athasian creature is psychic to some extent, and I really don't want to read the complete psionics handbook or whatever. but I will have to take a look at it if I feel like I need it to understand what's going on in these Monsters Compendium entries. But I really hope that I don't. In keeping with the sort of post-apocalyptic theme of Dark Sun, resource scarcity is a major element of the setting. So water is precious, metal is rare, so a lot of weapons are made of natural materials or they're made of stone, and so therefore they break a lot and they need to be replaced and so on. The cities are full of like slave markets and gladiatorial arenas. So there's a real kind of like, it feels to me like one of those post-Mad Max, Italian Mad Max knockoffs. So the wilderness is full of thirst and monsters, and civilization is full of, like, slavers and despots. A great time to be struggling for survival. So I don't know what I expect from the monsters of Dark Sun. One thing that interests me about it is that it is a D&D setting that is designed in connection with existing D&D, or indeed, like, in dialogue with existing D&D. It's not just somebody's personal variant on the kind of regular old fantasy campaign envisioned in Greyhawk. I'm not saying it's a totally new thing, but it's intentionally somewhat at odds with what came before it. It's very much like, not your old D&D, Grandpa. Life is tough. There's deserts everywhere. No one has a mullet. No one has a lute. And everyone's wearing bondage gear. So I'm anticipating that this will be reflected in the monsters as well. Like, we'll get some classic D&D monsters that will be subverted a little in some ways, with a lot of spikes and a lot of psychics. We've looked at one example already, and it's a little bit like that, right? Which was the Giths, which took the established mythology of the Githyanki and Githzerai and kind of, like, threw it out. It's also interesting that that's a monster that only really, like, the interesting thing about it only appears if you're dealing with players who already have a pretty detailed knowledge of AD&D. So I wonder if we're dealing with a setting that a lot of its appeal is about how it's not the traditional thing, but as a result, mainly appeals to people who already know the traditional thing, because obviously that freshness will be lost on you if this is your first AD&D setting. So I'm planning at the moment to do another Dark Sun episode for the first episode of next week, and then go on to a special episode for Friday. That's how I've been doing things for a while, and it seems to work out pretty well for me. However, after the holidays, so after the new year, I'm going on vacation for a couple of weeks. And what I'm going to try to do is, over the Christmas break, bank a bunch of Dark Sun episodes and then upload them as I can during that time. So during that period, you may get all Dark Sun episodes and no specials, because the specials, I won't be around to get people's requests for new special episodes, and I won't be able to record them because I won't have my mic with me. So we may do a run that's just like, you know, 6 to 8 Dark Sun episodes in a row, and then we'll be back to our normal schedule. Dark Sun episode, special episode, Dark Sun episode, special episode. But whatever order we do them in, I hope you'll join me for them right here on Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great. Thank you for listening. If you've got a favorite monster or something you'd like me to talk about, why not get in touch? I'm on Twitter as @GonzoHistory, on Mastodon as GonzoHistory@dice.camp, or you can find me on Instagram at MonsterManGonzo, or drop me an email, GonzoHistory@gmail.com. Our theme music is an extract from Solve the Damn Mystery by Jesse Spillane from the album Descent of the Goober Monster, and is used under a Creative Commons Attribution License. Our cover art is by Ray Otis. Thanks for listening, and please join me next time for Monster Man, a show about monsters, because monsters are great.